You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Well, if you need your faith in our system restored, I've got just the guest for you this next half hour. It is an incredible privilege and honor to be joined by two former federal appeals court judges. I'm going to introduce them in just one moment. But if you've been listening to us, you know that we have just kicked off Civic Media's Go for the Green and Gold multi-state text to win contest, where texting in the word of the hour will get you qualified to win one of two daily prizes and our grand prize. The daily prizes are $200 in cold hard cash or gold jewelry, and our grand prize, which we'll give away one lucky winner to one lucky winner, is two club level seats to Green Bay versus Minnesota. Yeah, it's going to be cold. That's why you like those indoor club-level seats. That game is on November 23rd, 2025 at 12 p.m., plus a gas card to get you to the game. And the word to win this hour is gift, as in Civic Media wants you to win this contest and enjoy our gift, G-I-F-T. Good luck to everyone, and I'll be repeating that in just a few more minutes. With all of that business out of the way, did you know 1 week ago today was Constitution Day? My two guests certainly did. It is my humble privilege to bring on former District Court and Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals Judge John Tinder. He was appointed to the District Court by Ronald Reagan in 87 and to the Appeals Court by President Bush, the original Bush, the first one, Herbert Walker, in 1992. He was joined. I'm sorry, Judge Wood, did you want to correct me? Was I getting something wrong?
I think it was the younger.
Was it the younger? 92. Time is but a slipstream now, judges, and thank you so much for correcting me. Not Herbert Walker, GW. Thank you, Judge Wood. And you just heard her voice there. That is Circuit Court, Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, former Judge Diane Wood. Welcome to you both. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you.
So you both, as well as nearly 38 other former federal court judges, have signed a letter trying to reinvigorate the public's awareness of the moment that we're in and the importance of an independent judiciary. You did this through your relationship with the Keep Our Republic organization, which was founded in 2020. It's a nonpartisan civic education organization committed to the vitality of America's democracy by promoting trust in elections, the rule of law, and constitutional checks and balances. It sounds real hoity-toity, but we are in a very literally tipping point moment, I think, especially when it comes to respect for the courts and the independence of the judiciary. Let me start with you, Judge Tinder. Why did you want to become part of the Article 3 coalition with Keep Our Republic? Why now? What do you think is at stake, sir?
Well, I know that my working colleagues that are still on the bench, their hands are tied, and the litigating forces have turned the spotlight on what judges are doing in all of these ways to which they can't respond. The internet, these comments that are being made after rulings are made, requests for impeachment, and so on and so forth. And these judges are just trying to do their job. And I know they can't speak because, like Diane, I had my First Amendment rights put on hold for the entire time I served, but they're back now. And these judges need support. They need to have someone speak for them because they can't speak for themselves. Plus, I saw all of the others, like Diane and Danelle Taha and Tim Evans and all of these wonderful people that I have such great regard for joining this Article 3 coalition. And I thought that's something I want to be a part of. So that's why
I did. Yeah, thank you, Judge. And again, this Article 3 coalition, part of the Keep Our Republic, has got at least, at my last count, 40 retired judges appointed by six different presidents across both parties, Carter, Reagan, H.W., Clinton, G.W., and President Obama. And Judge Wood, you were appointed by President Bill Clinton back in 1995. Why did you feel it was important to publish this open letter on Constitution Day? where does this moment sit in your mind in terms of both respect for the courts, but also more broadly, the rule of law? And why do you think that's important to Jane and John Doakes here in Wisconsin? Why does this matter to regular people?
Well, it's a great question, but I think I would start by saying that this letter gave John and me an opportunity, and actually the other people in the Article III Coalition, to take the veil away a little bit, to show people what the judges are really doing, why it matters to them. If you were to ask somebody if, you know, maybe they were contesting their taxes or they had a dispute over whether their insurance policy was going to cover their house or not if it blew away in a tornado, or any of a thousand real things that happen to real people, you want confidence in the people who are resolving those disputes. You want them to listen to the facts of what happened. You want them to be well-versed in the law and to apply that law in a nonpartisan way. You know, you leave your partisan views at the door when you walk into the courthouse. And I think that message has not been coming through as effectively as I would like to see it in the general media. Instead, you know, there are people who think, you know, if Donald Trump appointed you, then there's a whole set of things that you're going to do. And if Bill Clinton appointed you, there's somewhat a different set of things. If you look at the actual record of the judges who are on the courts, that is just not the way it works. I won't say, you know, we're all human, right? And we come with whatever our predispositions are, but then there's a process. You know, you listen to people, you read briefs, you listen to arguments, you talk to your colleagues, and you find some middle ground. And I think that the public would actually be thrilled to know that the courts work as well as they do. I'm not going to say there's never a glitch because we're a human institution, but they actually work quite well.
Folks, that's the voice of former Seventh Circuit Court of Appeal Judge Diane Wood. She's joined by Judge John Tinder. He both worked on the district courts and the Court of Appeals. They're talking to me today in honor of Constitution Day, and they both were signatories, along with 38 other retired federal court judges, signatories on a letter basically calling to us all. The first line of the letter reads this: since 1787, our Constitution has stood firm. Now so must we all. It is, Judge Tinder, a call to Americans. It's a call to Wisconsinites. It's a call to citizens to stand up for this vague concept of the rule of law. Judge Wood pointed out that when you look at the complete record from district courts to the courts of appeals, to the Supreme Court, what is true in volume and on average over time, I would say, is that judges are not trying to do a partisan job. They don't have predetermined outcomes. They're trying to understand the law correctly, follow precedent, and apply the law to the facts of the case at hand. I agree with that. Here's my question to you, Judge Tinder. Our national dialogue is focused on these big cases of renown before the Supreme Court. And legal scholars of all stripes have commented that the Supreme Court itself seems to have taken on a much more partisan slant. At least that is the public's perception of it. I believe that's leading to some of this erosion of trust that we see in the judiciary and by extension the rule of law. But just as I frequently try to remind folks that when you look at local and state government, it is far less partisan than what you see in the national dialogue, so too in the courts. How do you think we can have a better discussion about the role of courts, the importance of judicial independence, and focus less, or how, is that even possible, on how the Supreme Court in these handful of cases seem to dominate Americans and Wisconsinites' understanding of the court system? There's so much more action going on in the district and the appeals courts.
Well, there certainly is. And so much of it is how it's reported. So many of the cases that you're referring to that get all of the attention are on very preliminary rulings, preliminary injunctions, early in proceedings. They're not with full records. They're not done after the long process that litigation usually is. Day after day after day, courts all over the country are carefully deciding cases. They're listening to evidence. They're hearing the facts. They're waiting till everything plays out to make a decision. Jurors are given the facts, and they make these very difficult decisions that people have to make in cases. And they don't, it's not instantaneous. It doesn't just flash, suddenly you're at the end. I think the public's getting the impression that these things happen overnight because there's so much focus on very small portions of cases that get flashed into the highlight. In 28 years of service in the judiciary, 20 years on the district court, 8 years on the court of appeals, never once did I walk into a case thinking, well, how did the president and his supporters who appointed me want me to decide this case? That's not a factor for any judge. They walk into the case thinking, what's the evidence going to be? How should the law be read for this particular case? And day after day after day, the judges throughout the country, that's how they're deciding cases. They're not going in with a predisposition or a mission assigned by their appointing president. And we need to get people understanding that. I think the way cases are being covered starts with a presumption. Oh, this is a Biden judge. This is a Bush judge, or Bush one or Bush two judge. So he or she will decide that. That's not it at all. So somehow we need to get the message out and get it covered that judges are making independent decisions, and they are basing it on the case and the facts in front of them.
And I'll add my unsolicited 2 cents to your far more valuable insight, Judge Tinder, and that is absolutely what every American should expect of every single judge, especially those that serve as Article III lifetime appointees. That is actually the mandate for an Article III judge. We see, I think, some focus on the shadow docket because it can seem to instantaneously change substantially folks' rights and how we understand how our government is organized. Folks, if you're just joining us, I've got two incredibly wise and incredibly smart guests with me this afternoon. Two former federal Article III judges. Judge John Tinder, appointed twice to the federal bench, once to the district court and then to the Court of Appeals, first by Ronald Reagan and then by George W. Bush in 1992, and former Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals Judge Diane Wood. They're my special guests. We're celebrating a belated Constitution Day. They were co-signatories alongside at least 38 other former Article III federal court judges in calling on all of us as good citizens to understand the importance of an independent judiciary and to turn the dial back. When we come back, I'm going to ask these fabulous guests about the threats, literal threats against the judiciary, and how we can all together start to push back on this extraordinary rhetorical and literal physical attacks on the judiciary. Stay tuned, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everyone, and welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. 1 week ago was Constitution Day, where we are supposed to lift up, elevate, and remind ourselves that we are indeed a constitutional republic, a constitution that defines our rights as well as limits the powers of the various branches of government. We have two retired judges from our third branch of government, the Article III branch of government, the federal judiciary. They are former District and Court of Appeals Judge John Tinder and former Court of Appeals Judge Diane Wood. Thank you both again for being here with me. Right before the break, Diane Wood, we started to address, and I queued up for our discussion, the fact that Judge Esther Salas's son was murdered by someone who was targeting Federal Judge Salas. the FBI and other reporting agencies from the federal government have been reporting just an explosion of direct threats to judges. This is also, though harder to find precise data, happening at the state court level as well. Are you hearing from colleagues that they're concerned, that are currently on the bench, that they're concerned for their safety? And what do you want Americans from any side of the political spectrum who are extremely frustrated with the courts? What do you want them to know? How do we move past this? How do we dial it back?
Sure. I mean, it's a great question. The tragedy that Judge Salas suffered, losing her only child, he's her only son, but her only child indeed, was similar to the tragedy that one of our colleagues suffered years earlier, Joan Lefkoe, who lost both her mother and her husband to a disgruntled litigant. And our society is plagued with violence, whether it's Charlie Kirk or whether it's the man who was trying to kill then candidate Trump. It's just unacceptable. We have to have better ways of resolving our differences. I will say I don't know a single judge who is influenced by this violence in the way that judge does the job. People take this job to be public servants. You certainly don't get rich doing it. You have a lot of work, but it's very important work. It keeps our society rolling along. Somebody has to resolve these cases, whether they're civil or criminal or whatever they may be, constitutional. And we try to do that. Now, what I do hear, I mean, the judges do take care to work with the federal marshals, who in my experience were absolutely wonderful to work with. They were under the technical supervision of the Department of Justice, but a more dedicated professional group you could not have asked for. And people do worry about their family members. There are these threats of people delivering pizzas, you know, to say, I know where you live. And it takes a lot to feel that maybe your family member is in some danger. And I remember even talking to my own children saying, don't open packages that are on the front doorstep. You've got to be careful. And they were. So what I'm hoping is that we can somehow, in this terrible atmosphere of widespread violence, realize that sitting down and talking to each other is a much better way to resolve these problems. That's what we did on the Court of Appeals. People were appointed, as is true with the Article III coalition, by every president you could think of. And three of us would sit down in the room, talk our way through the case. Disagreement was rare. I actually did a study of it at one point. I wrote an article and figured out that in only 3% of the cases did somebody even bother to write a separate opinion at the Court of Appeals level. And that's because the law was what was telling us what to do. And I should add for your audience that the Seventh Circuit, where we were both judges, covers Wisconsin and Illinois and Indiana. So we know your state very well.
Thank you so much for reminding me to tell folks that, having worked for Judge Kaney on the Seventh Circuit, I sometimes forget. Folks don't know that's the circuit that covers Wisconsin, and as you point out so rightly, Illinois and Indiana. Judge Tinder, I've shared this story before on the air. Judge Kaney, when I was interviewed, never asked me who I voted for, didn't ask me anything about my politics. He asked me about my legal research. He asked to look at some of my writing. We had a deep conversation about one of the more complicated opinions that he had authored that I had read in detail. I spoke with his clerks at length. We had similarly very bookish, very intellectual, very deep conversations about the law. I never once, ever heard him say, well, this is where we're going on this case. He simply wanted to know what I thought about it. He wanted to know what my thinking was. There was never even the slightest partisan tinge. There's one thing that you want listeners to know about the vast, vast, vast majority of federal judges across the country in every single circuit about how they approach cases. What is it, sir? Because I think this is the message that we need people to understand.
Well, sitting on the collegial court with people like Diane Wood and our colleagues, it was such a remarkable experience to me, because I suspect Diane and I probably have never voted the same way in an election, maybe in our lives.
Probably.
But there was so much we agreed on. The areas where we differed, I came on, Diane had been on 20 plus years by the time I came on. I felt like I was walking into some conversations that had been going on for 25, 30 years among my colleagues. But immediately I would know we agree on most all of this. And the areas we didn't agree, we discussed. And it was such a wonderful experience. And I wish the public could see the inside of it. And the end product of it, the written opinions, are what we think and what we believe. No one comes into it thinking we're going to come out that way. As we go through the process, we reach a result.
Folks, we're going to have to leave it there. Judges, it would be my highest honor if you would share some more of your time with us again soon.
Gladly.
Because I want people to understand how this works. I'm going to describe that a little bit on the other side, my experience as a federal appeals court clerk, and I'm going to read the letter that Judges Tinder and Diane Wood signed to support our Constitution and the independence of our federal judiciary. Stay with us. It's the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big, big thanks to Judges Tinder and Wood for spending a half an hour of their Wednesday afternoon with me. Thank you to you for being with us this afternoon here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to put the link to the letter that the judges authored in honor of this year's Constitution Day, calling on all of us as Americans to recognize the critical to our democracy of the independent judiciary, of an Article III court system that's free from political influence and meddling. And boy, I hope they do come back, because I would love to ask them what they think about Congress perhaps adopting a binding code of ethics for the Supreme Court. I don't know. I think that would probably be a really good idea. I promised you I would read their letter, which I will do in just a moment. But it is Civic Media's Go for the Green and Gold Multi-State Text to Win contest in the 5 o'clock hour. You've got to text in the word to win this hour via the Civic Media app, which you can get for free wherever you get your apps from. Just search for Civic Media. Each time you text in the word of the hour, which we do many, many times a day, you will be entered to win a daily prize of either $200 or gold jewelry, and you'll be entered to win our grand prize, 2 club-level indoor heated seats to Green Bay versus Minnesota on November 23rd, plus a gas card to get you to the game in Green Bay, a $1,500 value. The word to win this hour that you want to text in to get entered to maybe win one of those amazing prizes is GIFT, G-I-F-T. That is GIFT, G-I-F-T. Also wanted to share this bit of programming notes. We have an incredibly special edition of the Maggie Dawn Show tomorrow. We are going to be broadcasting live from the historic Reisinger Family Hilltop Farm in Spring Green from Wisconsin for the whole show. And for more than 100 years, the Reisinger family has been part of Wisconsin's proud dairy farming tradition. And we're going to be talking with the family about their past, sharing some stories. We're going to talk about their present, and we're going to talk about what the future of farming looks like in the state of Wisconsin. We're going to talk about some of the challenges facing farmers and especially family farms today. We'll be joined also by the Farmer Angel Network to shed light on the mental health crisis facing farmers and agricultural communities. We'll also be joined by the Wisconsin Farmers Union. It's going to be an amazing show. Do not miss it. That is tomorrow, a special edition of the Maggie Dawn Show at the Reisinger Family Farm in Spring Green. Do not miss it. Okay, I wanted to share with you the judge's letter, because it's short, it's to the point, and it is oh so important. So here it is. This was a letter, again, published by the Article 3 Coalition of Keep Our Republic. You can find the letter at keepourrepublic.org. We're going to post the link to it in our show notes. You can find those after the show is over, wherever you get your podcast from, or at civicmedia.us. Here's the letter. Since 1787, our Constitution has stood firm. So now must we all. On this day in 1787, in 1787, our founders put aside their differences and signed the Constitution. As former federal judges, we each took an oath to support and defend the Constitutions. We come from different corners of America and have been appointed by presidents of both parties, but our commitment to the oath and Constitution knows neither party nor retirement date. We are compelled to speak out as sitting judges cannot, because the Constitution is under attack. Sitting judges bound by a code of ethics can only speak sparingly through their opinions. We, as retired judges, are no longer so constrained. The founders of our nation blazed a new trail in establishing our constitutional republic of three separate and co-equal branches of government. Our founders recognized that an independent judiciary, free from political pressure, was essential to protecting Americans' newly won liberty. As Alexander Hamilton wrote, "There is no liberty if the power of judging be not separated from the legislative and executive powers." Put plainly, a judicial branch cowed by the political branches cannot safeguard the rights of all citizens. Misinformation, disinformation, and fiery rhetoric distort public understanding of the judiciary's critical role in maintaining our democracy. Threats against judges and their families are obvious attempts to intimidate, harass, and pressure judges to sway their opinions, shaking the public's trust and confidence in the courts. This Constitution Day, we pledge to strengthen America's democracy by mobilizing a better informed citizenry. We are speaking out to protect the Constitution and all that it stands for. Its principles should be celebrated as the foundation of our nation. And we call upon every American to join us in upholding judicial independence for our own and future generations, as our founders envisioned and the Constitution guarantees. They're going on a national civic educational campaign in Savannah and Harrisburg and Denver and all over. Again, we'll put the link to the letter and keep our republic in our show notes. From that bit of inspiration to what I can only call embarrassing desperation of our president, Donald Trump literally melted down yesterday in front of the United Nations. The teleprompter didn't work, so, oh my goodness, the man spoke off the cuff for an hour, and it was frightening. We're going to play some of the sound, but I just want to give you this bit. A senior foreign diplomat texted the Washington Post global affairs columnist Ishan Tharoor right after Trump finished speaking, and this was the text. This man is stark raving mad. Do Americans not see how embarrassing this is? And I have to say, like, a lot of the coverage of this was weak. You know, things like it was meandering, scathing, emotional. But, you know, I think there is a whole nother set of words that could be used to describe what that was. Incoherent. Deluded. Not reflecting any firm grasp of reality. It was riddled with lies and exaggerations. He was, "I need the Nobel Peace Prize," claiming credit for resolving wars that haven't been resolved. He bragged about poll numbers. He even tilted at windmills, his favorite topic when he goes meandering about and can't quite keep a thought in his head for more than 30 seconds. He took a shot at the mayor of London. He just made stuff up. I mean, it was astonishing in the worst possible way. And Axios ran a headline that I thought captured the moment. This was the headline: "Trump's middle finger to the UN. Your countries are going to hell." I literally gasped when I heard the sound that we're about to play for you. I gasped. I could not believe that an American president stood in the General Assembly Hall of the United Nations and basically went on a lunatic rant. Jacob, I want to start with cut 12, because this is the one that made me gasp.
"I'm really good at this stuff. your countries are going to hell. In America, we've taken bold action to swiftly shut down uncontrolled migration.
You tell a room full of prime ministers and presidents that your countries are going to hell? Well, let's listen to him talk about how he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize after telling everybody that their countries are going to hell, because that, you know, that very Nobel Peace Prize-y, you know what I'm saying? Take a listen.
Now, after ending all of these wars and also earlier negotiating the Abraham Accords, which is a very big thing for which our country received no credit, never receives credit, everyone says that I should get the Nobel Peace Prize for each one of these achievements. But for me, the real prize will be the sons and daughters who live to grow up with their mothers and fathers, because millions of people are no longer being killed in endless and inglorious wars.
I don't want any more war. But asking for the Nobel Peace, it's not presidential. It's petty. It's small. I just have to read to you one of I have no explanation for this at all whatsoever. Here's what the president said about the border as well. Quote, "We have a border strong and we have a shape, and that shape doesn't just go straight up. That shape is amorphous when it comes to the atmosphere." What in the actual frickety, what? I gotta read it again. "We have a border strong and we have a shape, and that shape just doesn't go straight up. That shape is amorphous when it comes to the atmosphere." Huh? CJ, what does it mean when a shape is amorphous when it comes to the atmosphere? Do you have any idea what the president was talking about there?
Well, the claim that he didn't state facts that Biden's
he stated some facts and he just lied his butt off about other things, CJ. I'm asking you a direct question. What does this mean, CJ? We have a border strong and we have a shape, and that shape just doesn't go straight up. That shape is amorphous when it comes to the atmosphere. CJ, you criticize Biden for being off his rocker. Make that make sense to me.
The border is now zero coming across.
I'm asking you to make that, the sense of that statement.
You want to deflect from
I'm asking you a direct question. Okay, we're not going to have to. Okay, never mind. My point is that our president lied about a bunch of things before the United Nations, claimed that he's owed the Nobel Peace Prize, and said things that made no sense. This isn't my impression. Again, a senior foreign diplomat texted this about Donald Trump. "This man is stark raving mad. Do Americans not see how embarrassing this is?" I don't know about you, but I do. Listen, we've got to move on. It was an unmitigated disaster. And I don't care if you want to try to spin it into whatever pro-Trumpy kind of drivel you want. Trust me when I say this. That moment will be ridiculed and held up as an example of a very dark moment in American history. The reality is that America right now is more isolated, more at risk, both economically and from a national security perspective, than it has been in a long time, because of what Donald Trump has done. The world does not respect us. It's basically considered us an irrelevancy, and it's moving on without us. And no temper tantrum by the orange man in chief in the United Nations General Assembly, no assertions to the contrary, will change that fact. And we have nobody but Donald Trump to thank for it. When we come back, we're going to talk about Kimmel. Did you listen last night? What did you think? Kind of an interesting contrast between the, again, foreign diplomat, stark raving mad president, and Jimmy Kimmel calling us to our higher angels and giving us a chuckle. 855-75-CIVIC. 855-752-4842. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. While our president was basically the laughingstock of the world during his, again, this is a senior foreign diplomat to the Washington Post, a stark raving mad stream of consciousness before the United Nations yesterday, a comedian sounded presidential, and not just any comedian, the comedian that Donald Trump and his FCC chairman have tried to censor and silence, Jimmy Kimmel. Did you watch it last night? Because, wow. If Donald Trump was trying to tank Jimmy Kimmel's ratings, this was not the way to go about it. Millions and millions of Americans watch Kimmel. I usually don't watch late night talk shows. I just don't. It's not my thing. I need to be going to bed. I need less politics at that time of the day, not more. But I watched it. Apparently 6.3 million viewers on broadcast television. That's triple what he normally gets. And that is even though Sinclair and Nexstar refused to play out the show, so that basically cut off about a quarter of the U.S. TV market. So, yeah. And on YouTube and other outlets, it's like 25, 26 million views of it. Of course, we will post the YouTube and some links to Jimmy Kimmel's monologue so that you all can check it out in our show notes for today and keep that number rising. I'm just going to, like, maybe every day just recycle it. Free speech is good. America is good. We can say what we actually think. We can be wrong. It's okay. But let's take just a couple of cuts of what the comedian that sounded like a president had to say yesterday. Let's listen to Jimmy Kimmel on free speech.
Look, I never imagined I would be in a situation like this. I barely paid attention in school. But one thing I did learn from Lenny Bruce and George Carlin and Howard Stern is that a government threat to silence a comedian the president doesn't like is anti-American. That's anti-American.
Indeed it is. And good on ya, Jimmy Kimmel. And here is Jimmy Kimmel, I think, trying to, you know, take some accountability and hopefully call us to our better angels.
Nor was it my intention to blame any specific group for the actions of what it was obviously a deeply disturbed individual. That was really the opposite of the point I was trying to make. But I understand that to some that felt either ill-timed or unclear or maybe both. And for those who think I did point a finger, I get why you're upset. If the situation was reversed, there's a good chance I'd have felt the same way.
What kind of, you know, up is down, right is left moment are we in when a late night talk show host sounds more presidential, more reasonable, more grounded, more rational? And our president did on the very same day when addressing the United Nations. These are dark times. They're trying times. And I think it's very hard to find energy some days. Today's been a hard day for me. I'm sure each and every one of you have hard days from time to time. But we gather here together on our show and on this network to hopefully have a couple of laughs, talk about the news, talk about politics, and share our perspectives. This show, this network, this opportunity to be with all of you, it does keep me going. And so I thank you very deeply for this opportunity to be with you every day and to try to sort through this time together. I've gotten both criticism and praise for some of my comments over the time that I've been on the air. And I just want to say this to each and every one of you, especially in light of yet another shooting and tragedy this morning. This isn't a time for both sides, both siderisms, It is a moment where we have to be clear-eyed and sober and accurate and tell the damn truth about what we're seeing. And it is also a time for everyone to say again and again and again, no matter how bad it gets under this Trump administration, that the solution is only found through the ballot box. It is only found through our court system. Though our confidence in our courts may be weakened, I do believe, I hope I give you hope every day that this moment will pass. We will come out the other side. We will be able to reestablish some common ground, but it will take a collective commitment to do so. It takes a commitment from each and every one of us and those that we disagree with to actually value facts and to require of our elected officials that they call us to our best angels, that they are role models, that they exhibit courage and integrity and selflessness. Now, no matter what your politics may be in this moment, those are ideas that I think we can all get behind. And if we're being candid about it, what we saw from our president yesterday before the United Nations was not selflessness, it was not courage, and it certainly lacked in integrity. What we saw from Jimmy Kimmel was that. And he's just a stand-up comic. We all can live in courage and integrity and selflessness and try to model this for our elected political leaders. It starts with us. That's going to do it for me today. Thanks for being with me. We got that special farm show tomorrow. Don't miss it. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.